Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the surface, the uproar over General Stanley McChrystal's profile in Rolling Stone magazine is kind of silly. But after the juvenile insults and barroom bragging are said and done, serious questions face the general, the president, and the country. President Obama confronting General McChrystal today in the White House. Generals are supposed to know their place in a democracy. A president is supposed to run a war with firm resolve. But what about this general, this president, and this troubled war? This hour on Point, the firestorm over Stanley McChrystal and the future of the war in Afghanistan. You can join the conversation. Should he, McChrystal, be in charge? Should he be gone? What have we learned from the firefight in Rolling Stone? We start with Michael Hastings, the reporter who wrote the story. He joins us from Kandahar. Michael Hastings, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on your show. Really appreciate it.
You're still in Afghanistan. You're in Kandahar, and we understand you've been under rocket fire today. What's happening?
Yes, there was just a rocket fire attack here, and we all ducked under our desks and went to the bunker, and then the electricity went out, but everything is fine now.
Michael, how long were you with General McChrystal and his crew, and in what kind of circumstances to get this sort of dope?
It was a month from mid-April to mid-May. I met him in Paris.
Just trying to get a sense of what kind of environments you met with them in, where they were talking so glibly, loosely, even offensively about their colleagues in the civilian wing in the administration.
Well, it was very unusual to see a general in that environment. He had come over to Europe on a NATO tour, and so I saw him in Paris, and as well as in Berlin, and spent some time with him there. I happened to also spend his wedding anniversary with him and his senior-level staff, where they proceeded to get fairly inebriated, which one would expect from sort of infantry guys, you know, in a town in Paris. So a number of these experiences were just much different from the normal profile you get of a general when you just fly around a battlefield with him, whether in Iraq or Afghanistan. So it's sort of a unique opportunity, and I was lucky to have it.
What was General McChrystal's response when his top aides were more or less trash-talking the administration? For example, when an aide called Vice President Biden, "bite me," right next to McChrystal, did the general laugh? Was he in on the game?
Oh, yeah, no, he laughed, certainly. You know, this is their humor, and I think the humor reflects something more. I think it reflects a disdain for the civilian leadership in a way, and that's how it comes out. I mean, I think, you know, obviously Vice President Biden is the subject of a number of jokes, but I think, A, if you're a general, it's probably not wise to criticize him too openly. B, not when a reporter who you just met walks into the room and has his notepad out.
Did they know that you were there? Did they notice you scribbling notes, Michael?
Oh, yeah. I had my tape recorder and notepad out most of the time. So it was always a little unclear to me, you know, sort of what was their motivation of allowing me in and all this access. I think there's a number of factors that were involved, but I think an important one is that they had had a number of very flattering profiles done on them over the past year, and so they were accustomed to sort of allowing access and having the reporters play ball because they could give them more access later. Well, that's not really a game I'm interested in playing.
Did you have any sense that General McChrystal and his staff were trying to send a message to the White House through you?
I thought that because, again, as I was sort of going through the different rationales for why his staff and he would be telling me the things they told me, I think there was obviously some very serious frustration they have about the direction of the policy, especially on the diplomatic side. I think also they have a history, and I say they, I mean General McChrystal and the people around him, of what I call sort of throwing hand grenades into the pond. They like to shake things up. They like to shock the system. What better way than to do a profile in Rolling Stone? It's cool. You're going to reach a younger audience, perhaps. It's going to be a little edgy, and maybe you can even get some sort of, you know, policy points out there along the way or sort of sentiment. Perhaps it was just a miscalculation It's really, you'd have to ask them, and I'm sure they have, you know, an interesting explanation. But it should be pointed out right now, the response to the story has been, did they apologize? Which essentially, you know, they're not even disputing it.
Michael Hastings wrote the Rolling Stone piece. He joins us from Kandahar. Michael, the general is in the hot seat in the White House today. But reading your piece, he did not make the most incendiary remarks. There were some critical remarks from General McChrystal, but they were rather measured. Has this piece sort of unfairly bound him up in the more trash-talky comments of his subordinates?
I don't think so. I mean, I think leadership comes from the top, especially in an organization that General McChrystal runs. I think a lot of the sentiments that his people reflect also reflect his own feelings, and I'm fairly confident of that. You know, whether or not it's fair for him to have been tied up in all this, my goal is to write a story that's as accurate, truthful to what I see and what I hear and what's really going on. The sort of consequences of that are out of my control, so I just try to focus on sort of telling people what I think is actually happening, not the sort of normal spin that we seem to get.
Michael, what's the fundamental conflict here? Is this just personality conflict, though that could be big in itself, or is there are you reporting really on a conflict about war strategy, war execution?
Well, I think there's serious conflict in terms of what the sort of vision that President Obama had for his Afghan strategy and versus what the strategy became. I mean, if you go back to President Obama's comments in March of 2009, he sets out to sort of narrow the aims of our goal in Afghanistan. And then all of a sudden, the general he chooses goes and does the exact opposite, essentially expands our aims exponentially. So we went from the beginning of the Obama administration of about 150 Western troops in Afghanistan to now almost 150,000. Which is not a narrowing of aims in any sense of the word. So I think that is the fundamental conflict, and the fact that the policy that Obama tried to launch just got out of his control. He had no control over it.
Michael, you're still in Kandahar. I was a little surprised after dropping a bombshell like this in Rolling Stone that you would still be in Afghanistan. What's the reception you're getting today from troops, from commanders there? You just essentially put the top commander in the hot seat in the White House, maybe his career at risk. What's the reaction you're getting on the ground?
Been very positive about it. A lot have come up to me and said, hey man, cool story. A lot agree on the rules of engagement piece of the story. I think I probably just got a dirty look. I'm at the from another, so not everybody obviously agrees with it, but yeah, I mean the reaction has been actually overwhelmingly positive. And people think, hey, you know, if the relationship with the White House is like that, that needs to get out there. I think there's also been surprise among the soldiers that General McChrystal would talk to Rolling Stone. And also among the younger soldiers, they think it's sort of cool, and they've also let me know that. But otherwise, everybody's been great.
Michael Hastings, the reporter who put the story in Rolling Stone, joined us from Kandahar in Afghanistan. Michael, be safe. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
The story in Rolling Stone is The Runaway General. Joining me now from Silver Spring, Maryland, is Elliot Cohen. He's director of the Strategic Studies Program at the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University, author of Supreme Command, Soldiers, Statesmen, and Wartime Leadership. He's a personal acquaintance of General McChrystal, U.S. Ambassador to Kabul Carl Eikenberry, and U.S. Special Envoy Richard Holbrooke. His opinion piece titled Why McChrystal Has to Go appears in today's Wall Street Journal. Elliot Cohen, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Why does, in your words, McChrystal have to go?
Well, I think there are really two issues here. One is an issue of judgment. I think, just listening to Mr. Hastings, simply to have him in the room and to allow on staff to talk in front of a reporter like that, just egregiously bad judgment. And I think if you knew anything about Rolling Stone or even if you Googled the reporter in question, you would know that you were just taking enormous risks. And so there's folly there, and there's folly, I think, also in terms of keeping your staff in line. I mean, it is the job of the general to set a certain tone in his command. But I think that the larger issue really does have to do with the norms of civil-military relations. And in our system, not many people are aware of this, it's actually a court-martial offense under Article 88 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice to utter contemptuous remarks about a number of senior officials, to include the Vice President of the United States. And unfortunately, that line was crossed. Now, the one thing I should say is, in all this, is in my book, and I say this in the article, Stan McChrystal is a hero. Stan McChrystal did extraordinary things in Iraq. He deserves a lot of the credit for taking down al-Qaeda in Iraq. He is an inspiring leader. He is unquestionably a patriot. He's a tremendously accomplished man, and this is a tragedy that it's come to this. But I think, unfortunately, this is one of those cases where the requirements of good order and discipline require that he step aside.
We'll know within the hour, perhaps, what's up with that. Listeners hearing us on tape may already know. You say he has to go. Can the president afford to fire him? He's in charge of the strategy. He wrote the strategy.
Well, look, there's nobody but nobody in wartime who is irreplaceable. And you get yourself in real trouble if you think that. I think this is a tremendous test for President Obama. He is the commander-in-chief. They fired a shot across General McChrystal's bow over a speech he gave in London, which was really much milder, which was almost...
Yep, so he's been warned in that way. Elliot Cohen, author of Supreme Command, Soldiers, Statesmen, and Wartime Leadership, joining us there from Silver Spring, Maryland. Very good to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the firestorm over the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, the fate of General Stanley McChrystal, the future of the war in Afghanistan. And by the way, I should say there's a link to the full Rolling Stone story. It's not on the newsstands until Friday, but you can read it right now at onpointradio.org. Click right through. It is quite a story. Let's hear just last week, show you how winds change. This is last Tuesday. Michelle Flournoy, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, testifying on Capitol Hill before the Senate Armed Forces Committee about the positive effects of General McChrystal's shift to a counterinsurgency in Afghanistan.
These are long-term problems, and their solutions will require patience, persistence, and flexibility. But we are making progress, sometimes slow, but we believe steady. And we are confident that General McChrystal will be able to show further progress by the end of this year.
Confident in General McChrystal. That was last week. We're in a different place now. Joining me now from Newport News, Virginia, is Bob Killebrew, retired Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel, Senior Fellow at the Center for New American Security. Bob Killebrew, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
Also joining us from Washington is Lawrence Wilkerson, retired Army Colonel and former Chief of Staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell from 2002 to 2005. He's a professor of National Security Studies at George Washington University and of Government and Policy at the College of William and Mary. Lawrence Wilkerson, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom.
First to you, Lawrence Wilkerson, what do you make of what's just exploded kind of in everybody's faces in the last 24 hours here?
The thing that leaps out at me immediately is a question. Where are the Eisenhowers? We seem to lack generals who understand the tactical realities beneath them, understand the operational and what I'll call theater strategic issues around them, and understand the political realities and the grand strategic issues above them. It's clear that for whatever reason, and I suspect I know some of the reason, General McChrystal has difficulty operating in this kind of complexity, and I would submit that Afghanistan in and of itself adds some nuances to those complexities.
Bob Killebrew, what do you think? Did the task, the enormity of the task with all its facets, get away from this general? Would you keep him in position or not?
Well, I think, first of all, Tom, we have to consider the context. I don't think this is a crisis. It's a crisis in civil-military relations, as my friend Elliot Cohen possibly thinks.
Hmm.
I think what you have here is a very good general who failed to exercise supervision over his staff, who committed an almost unthinkable blunder by having a reporter present while his staff was trash-talking senior executives in the government. And I think he's committed a blunder of the first magnitude. But we should not let an article in Rolling Stone and locker room talk in Paris escalate to thinking about this like Truman firing MacArthur or something at that level. You know, McChrystal was a hero 3 days ago. He's the same guy now. I think the president needs to lock his heels hard. I think the president has to decide if he still has enough confidence in him to keep him on board. But I don't think we ought to blow this too far out of proportion.
Lawrence Wilkerson, can this president keep this general in charge of this war?
That's a key question. The bigger question, I think, is should this war be prosecuted in the first place any further than it has been? Should any more blood and treasure be expended on it? The answer to that, I think, is resounding no, and therein lies the petard upon which both Obama and McChrystal, or hoist McChrystal more vigorously than Obama. He's trapped by his campaign rhetoric. He's trapped by the fact that he tried to use Afghanistan as a foil to defeat his Republican opponent. It worked fairly well. So he's in a corner. McChrystal's in an even bigger corner because he's an advocate for this new coin strategy and so forth, which America, regardless of who's executing it, just doesn't do well. And we're spending a lot of blood and treasure on doing poorly on. So the bigger issue is Afghanistan. But the president does has, as Lieutenant Colonel Killebrew said, he's got to make the ultimate decision. And I suspect that what's going to happen is McChrystal will tender his resignation, the president will ponder it, and then probably accept it. But that attributes a lot of political courage to the president, which I'm hearing from the innermost circles is the most disconcerting aspect of this president, and that is that he does lack political courage. This comes from the discussions over health care, comes from the discussions over the BP incident, the oil spill in the Gulf, and a host of other smaller issues that have demonstrated to people close to the president that perhaps he doesn't have the political courage that they thought he had.
Could we just take that, though, there's so many layers here, but just at the level of chain of command, Bob Killebrew says, you know, let's not get our hair on fire. It's not pretty, but it's an article in Rolling Stone. We've got a war, whether you like it or not, it's underway here. But in terms of, I don't know, insult to the chain of command, do you think this looks like a fireable offense in toto or not?
I think the bigger problem, as Secretary of Defense George Marshall pointed out vividly with regard to MacArthur's firing by Truman, is what it does to the morale of the troops in Afghanistan. For example, we have troops now who are so plugged in that I dare say all over Afghanistan now, Marine soldier alike, down to the lowest level, know what this article said.
Sure.
And that lowers their morale because they've been told by their ultimate commander in Afghanistan that the civilian leadership, Jones, Biden, the president himself, are incompetent.
A clown, bite me, and all the rest.
This cannot do any good for troops who are already, as the article also reflects from one aspect, disconcerted and discombobulated, if you will, by this conflict. I mean, I have contact with Marines, soldiers, civilians in the embassy and so forth. And so I get everything every day in emails and such, and I get positive and I get negative. But what I get across the board is, when is this going to end, especially from the grunts in the foxholes, the guys who really have to bear the burden of any conflict.
Bob Killebrew, what about it? The article also reports on big questions about where this war is going. It reports on General McChrystal in the field and a young private confronting him in the field in a sad situation where somebody's been killed. McChrystal's come out. The private says to the top general, "What are we doing here?" Does this article make that kind of uncertainty worse?
Well, there are two angles to this, I think, Tom. One is, unfortunately, the McChrystal Rolling Stone article opens up or allows critics of the war to open up the whole issue about our strategy again. You just heard it from my compatriot up there at William & Mary. It's unfortunate but true that a lot of people within the administration haven't really fallen in on the president's strategy. And the McChrystal episode gives them a chance to reopen the whole thing. That's the real damage of this issue.
Well, is that, if I may, I want to hear your whole line of thought, but even last week before Congress, there were so many questions around the time that General Petraeus fainted. I mean, we saw the Marja push seems to have been, well, certainly far from what the goal was, if not a bust. Kandahar has been postponed. I mean, isn't it the progress of the war itself that is raising questions, Bob?
Well, sure. And counterinsurgency always is a long and bitter and difficult campaign with setbacks and a long, long time to get the issue settled. I disagree that the United States doesn't do counterinsurgency well. Actually, we do. We do when we have the patience to execute the plan. What's going to happen to McChrystal and what may happen to our strategy is that we will start to question whether or not we have the long-term commitment to make counterinsurgency work. We've already begun to fold on that with the president's decision that we'd start withdrawing troops in 2011. I've heard from Afghans and I've heard from U.S. people that had a very negative effect on the Afghans' perception of our willingness to stick the war out. And the McChrystal issue, which is being decided as we are talking about this, opens up the whole issue again. That's the really sad thing about the careless, incompetent way that staff and that general permitted that discussion with Rolling Stone.
I want to look at that. We've got callers lined up to get in here. Peter in Boston. Peter, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks. Listen, you know, I'm listening to for a few days now to a lot of people that are so-called informed and intelligent and making statements, well, you know, we need this general because he's the smartest guy in the room. He's the guy to execute this war. I find it hard to believe that he's the only guy that can put a plan together and execute it, and if he's not in position, somehow the army's going to fall apart and everything is going to go basically to hell. I mean, that's ridiculous. Everyone is replaceable. This is the second time the guy made a statement that was questionable. I think it's about time Obama has to take a stand and make a statement by letting him know and others know that, look, either you guys stay in line, support the cause, or get out the way.
So dress him down or fire him? Let him go, Peter?
He should be released. I mean, I'm sure there's people in line that can handle the job. It's ridiculous to say let this guy stay. For what?
Peter, we've got it. Let me get one more comment right here. Thank you for your call. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Brenda. Brenda, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I want to say that Michael from Rolling Stone stole a little bit of my thunder. My thought was in the beginning when Obama was developing his strategy. McChrystal came out with what he wanted to do. And that made Obama alter his plan and gear up. So did that make him feel, McChrystal, like he was more powerful by altering that strategy? And number two, because we're supposed to start coming out by 2011, is he now talking again because he's not for that?
It's a great question, Brenda. I'm glad you raise it just that way. Lawrence Wilkerson, how about it? Trash talk aside for a moment, does this boil down to a conflict over strategy? Bob Killebrew says when the president put a begin to withdraw date out there, he opened up a problem. Did he open up a problem with his general?
Well, Peter and Brenda make good points. Marshall also said about MacArthur when Truman had fired him, a soldier can very easily be made to feel sorry for himself, particularly if he's in disagreeable, unattractive, dangerous localities and been asked for tremendous efforts for a long time in those localities. McChrystal's tired. He's, as the article described, he's a man who sleeps 4 hours a night. I can identify with that. That's the way I was when I was in the service.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to come home for that reason alone. The second point that was intimated there by Brenda, I think, this isn't the first time. I'm still angry with Stanley McChrystal with regard to the way he tried to cover up and then obfuscate and then clarify, as it were, the Pat Tillman issue.
But mostly cover up.
Yes, the speech he gave in London at the IISS and some other things that I know about that haven't been made public. 5 years as head of JSOC, for example, communicating directly with the Vice President of the United States around the chain of command. So, you know, there are other issues here. And I agree with both of the callers' points, and I think the president's going to have to demonstrate some political courage here. I'm just doubtful as to whether he's going to do it.
Bob Killebrew, is it possible that General McChrystal is, you know, buying his own ticket out here, sort of writing his own exit strategy with this sort of racy interview?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't think McChrystal has that in mind a bit. I think what happened was he and his staff got a little out of control in a hotel in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling Stone picked it up on tape and printed it, and now Stanley McChrystal may be looking for a new job by the end of the day. I think that's the case. I don't see any Machiavellian strategy here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to say, in kind of contrary to your previous guy, that Stanley McChrystal is one of the best generals in the United States Army. The idea that he would be somehow skipping the chain of command and doing underhanded things is just ridiculous.
Well, but I mean, it's a matter of record that he was involved in the cover up of the actual facts of the Pat Tillman death in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we don't need to revisit that again. I think that's been settled pretty well. But the essential thing in Pat Tillman was to try to give the guy a medal because his family would feel good.
Yeah, let's go to Art in Nashville, Tennessee. Art, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm concerned about the politicization of the whole decision about the war. If we're in a war, let's not repeat the same mistakes that we made in Vietnam. First, we announced that we're going to leave Afghanistan after X number of months. Now we're politicizing the war. Are we in here to win or are we in there to withdraw? Enough is enough with the politicization. Let's win the war and let's get on with life.
Art, thank you very much for your call. Bob, how about it? I mean, to be reading about a deeply troubled war in Rolling Stone, I don't know what else could give you a bigger sense of deja vu about Vietnam than that. But Art's worried about politicization of this war. What do you see happening there, Bob?
Well, all wars are political, and counterinsurgency wars are more political than others. But I understand what he means. The fact is this war is going to take a while. We've learned from what we did in Vietnam. McChrystal is implementing a counterinsurgency strategy that everyone, including the president, have agreed has the best chance of success. The fact that we're in a difficult time right now in the war doesn't mean that we're not going to win or we won't prevail. You know, Dave Petraeus is fond of saying, hard doesn't mean impossible. We're in a hard place now. That's all.
Let's go to Mike in Fort Drum, New York. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I don't really have a question, more of a comment. I was listening to your show. I do quite a bit. And, it was extremely courageous of General McChrystal to speak.
Mike, did we lose you there at Fort Drum? Courageous, he says. Fort Drum looks like could be military. Lawrence Wilkerson, how do you think this is going to be seen within the military? If that's what Mike is, I mean, is that, do you think that'll be a representative feeling, courageous, to sort of let some of this stuff fly?
Well, there'll be some that will feel that way, especially in the Special Operating Forces community from which McChrystal comes. And we haven't talked about that. That's an element of it that disturbs me, too. The same community that Eric Prince, CEO of what was formerly Blackwater, mm-hmm. for example. These people are different kinds of soldiers. And while I'm not trying to disparage what they contribute on the battlefield, I am saying there is some question in the military community about whether or not they have the bona fides to be elevated to the responsible ranks of 3- and 4-star generals. That's a professional argument that's been going on since Sam Nunn created Special Operations Command. The bigger argument, though, I think, that's suggested by that is this contradictory approach to the president if he says we're getting out, because that's ultimately what President Obama has established as the objective for what we're doing in Afghanistan right now, to stop the blood, to stop the treasure. $1 trillion, so many deaths, so many casualties, NATO too. Stop that. Get out. I love when these people talk about winning. What is winning?
Well, President Obama winning? Said disrupt, dismantle, defeat. That sounds like winning.
Yeah, well, if you want to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat al-Qaeda, the remnants that are left are in Pakistan. They're not in Afghanistan. And our very presence in Afghanistan is destabilizing Pakistan, a nuclear-powered country. We need to get out of Afghanistan, and the military people who are advocating staying because they think their favorite pet project, COIN, is going to be proved in Afghanistan, and I can't buy that. I simply can't buy that. The political realities say otherwise.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the firestorm over the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, the fate of General Stanley McChrystal, the future of the war in Afghanistan. Lawrence Wilkerson is with us, retired Army colonel, former chief of staff to Secretary of State Colin Powell. Bob Killebrew joins us from Newport News, Virginia, retired Special Forces lieutenant colonel, now senior fellow at the Center for New American Security. Here's General Petraeus, just last week, of course, there was the fainting spell, but he also talked to Congress. He acknowledged things have been a little rough. Time is an issue, he said.
I noted several months ago during my annual posture hearing that the going was likely to get harder before it got easier. That has already been the case, as we have seen recently. but it is essential that we make progress in the critical southern part of the country, the part where, in fact, the 9/11 attacks were planned by al-Qaeda during the period when the Taliban controlled it and much of the rest of the country.
Essential to make progress in the South, progress that has not been substantially made yet. We've got comments here from Facebook. Gary says, I'd like to comment on the admirable characteristic of this administration of transparency and the avoidance of utilizing only yes people. He said if he's fired for speaking his mind in the print medium, I'll be disappointed. Scott says he should be made to stay and finish the job he lobbied for. What, staying as a kind of punishment? I don't know. Sean in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Sean, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you?
Well.
There were a couple questions by who you were interviewing. I didn't really catch the name. I took a couple issues with that. One was a comment that was made that whether or not special operations community personnel have the bona fides to lead at a 4- and 5-star general level. And I wanted some clarity
right.
on that one.
Okay, that was from Lawrence Wilkerson. Something else?
And the second would be, he also made the comment that the remnants of al-Qaeda and Taliban are in Pakistan now and not in Afghanistan. And if that would be the case, then can he explain the daily conflicts in small villages and outposts and cops throughout the Afghanistan area?
We'll pick him up, Sean. Thanks for your call. Lawrence Wilkerson, I wish you would elaborate. I'm not sure I totally understood what you're saying about the special operations community and your misgivings there, and this bearing in mind, you know, Bob Killebrew's retired Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel, but what's your issue there, Lawrence?
The issue is this, that operating in secrecy primarily, particularly with things like SEAL Team 6, Delta Force, and some Ranger operations, with which I have a great deal of familiarity.
And this is the world, more or less, of Stanley McChrystal before he took charge
of everything. That's the world of Stanley McChrystal, 5 years in charge of the most secretive organization in the United States military. Operating in secrecy, operating without transparency, operating, so to speak, without the normal rules that the conventional military goes with, rules like dealing with the media, dealing with public affairs issues, and so forth and so on, one wonders if one can come through that environment and then establish oneself as a 3- or 4-star with the same kind of recognition of the complexities that I led off my conversation with, regretting that we don't seem to have any Dwight Eisenhowers anymore. It's difficult to blame Stanley McChrystal for that because he's not come up through the exigencies and the demands and the complexities necessary to build that kind of capability.
This is who he is. This is what he was raised up in the military to do.
Precisely. And on the second point, if I said Taliban, I misspoke. I apologize to your caller. I meant al-Qaeda, which is supposed to be our objective.
Bob Killebrew, I believe your daughter is serving in the military in Kabul right now. Do you have any misgivings about the sort of special forces cast of Stanley McChrystal's background when it comes to heading up this war effort in Afghanistan?
No, I don't. And by the way, it's Colonel, not Lieutenant Colonel.
Excuse
me. If
that
makes any difference.
Mm-hmm.
The McChrystal's had a lot of time in black ops and special forces. I might add the white ops side of special forces understands counterinsurgency probably better than anybody in the world. And that's the majority of special operations, special forces kinds of people. So in addition to the black world that McChrystal's been immersed in, he's also been immersed in the white ops side of counterinsurgency, building alliances, building local militias, working with the people. So it's not quite true to say he's been nothing but in a closed room all this time. He also has served a lot of high-level staff jobs at the very high levels of the military services, and I believe he was the director of operations of the J-3 for the Joint Chiefs of Staff before he went over. He's had plenty of a political exposure. Pardon me?
How does one explain drinking to the faced aspect of it in a bar with your colonels?
Well, I can tell you that
that's special operation forces, right?
In the Army, that's not just restricted to special operations forces. This is a minor point. But when you're around soldiers and they're by themselves, they do soldier talk. And what you see in that Rolling Stones article is soldier talk. It's not very clean. It's not nice. It's just the Army and the way the Army is. And it's the way men are when they're together in dangerous situations.
I should say, Anthony Cordes.
That doesn't excuse McChrystal's obligation to control his staff, and if that staff had belonged to me, those conversations about the vice president would have been appropriately cut off.
I'm reading Anthony Cordesman in the Wall Street Journal today saying this is the way people in Washington on virtually any level of power and responsibility talk almost without exception, but then it's not always in the press. I want to talk about the counterinsurgency strategy and the conflict there, but let's get a call. Gary, Charleston, South Carolina. Gary, you're on the air.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I want to propose to both of your listeners a hypothetical and see what they think. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
That is, what if General McChrystal called his staff together, developed an attack plan for Kandahar, then called a division commander and said, General, go and do. And the general then, in his own headquarters, talked to the media and said, well, I don't like McChrystal's plan. I don't think we ought to be doing it.
He's a bozo, whatever.
What do we think McChrystal would do in that case? And that's my hypothetical.
If the boot were on the other foot, Gary, thank you. Lawrence, Bob, let me put that to you. If this had happened under Stanley McChrystal, as our caller lays out.
Well, first of all, that's not what McChrystal's staff did in the article. But if that were to happen in the Army, in the real world, McChrystal would be perfectly satisfied to go down and if not fire, certainly have harsh words with the division commander. Look, we're looking for black and white situation or black and white solutions here, and there are no black and white solutions.
But we've got a troubled war, and the top commander and his crew in public, essentially through the media, sort of sticking it right to the inner circle of the commander in chief. Isn't that a problem?
It certainly is a problem, but A, wars are always troubled, and B, there is absolutely no sign that McChrystal disagrees with the president or his strategy or the execution of the things he's been given to execute the war with. What you have here is an out-of-control staff dissing people in the administration and a general not correcting it.
Well, Lawrence Wilkerson, but I'm still wondering there, you know, if there's no conflict, how can there be so much tension? How do you interpret all this tension if there's no conflict on strategy, Lawrence?
Well, I think there's a very vivid and blatant disagreement between the president and McChrystal. I think McChrystal understands that the president, regardless, is going to be out of Afghanistan on the time frame or reasonably close to the time frame that he's announced. McChrystal doesn't like that because coin takes longer, to quote Colonel Killebrew, and he's not going to get that longer. Look up at the political realities of this situation. We are on the point of fiscal bankruptcy. We have unemployment rates in excess of 20% in key areas in this country like southern Ohio, Michigan, and California. We have a drastic situation economically in this country, and we're pouring trillions of dollars into war theaters that increasingly look as if they are not very productive. So this president has to respond to the American people, the bulk of the American people's desires to stop that, and he's going to stop that.
Let's go to Bob in Stanton, Virginia. Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, I think if we're going to vilify somebody, it should be the reporter. He walked into a very personal situation. When he realized what it was, he should have turned off his tape recorder and had a beer, walked out. If we had had the press in World War II that we have today, that war would have gone on much, much longer, because these guys, these reporters, are after something that's going to be sensationalized.
You just don't want to know, Bob? Better not to know?
There are some things we don't need to know. There are some things that are not necessary to report. What a bunch of people say when they're sitting around having a beer is not news. If this had taken place in General McChrystal's headquarters as a serious conversation, fine, that's news. This was not news.
But is there an issue that General McChrystal let it happen? And he was contacted by Rolling Stone, you know, before it went to press, asked if he had any problem with what was there. No objections.
You're under stress all the time.
Yep.
This is one of the times when you get to let go of the stress. He's in a circle of his own staff. If that's the way they unwind, fine. Because the next day, they're going to get back to their job, and they're going to do the mission that they are supposed to do. This is just trash talking. It's a bunch of guys letting off steam. It is not news.
Bob, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Let me get one more, and then we'll look at it. Elson in Ithaca, New York. Elson, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have two perspectives and a question I want to give to your people in your interview. First of all, I have two kids in the military. My son is a Marine Corps officer. My daughter is enlisted Navy Arabic linguist.
Thank you to your family.
And they find McChrystal's comments out of line. They're told their commander-in-chief, the president, is the ultimate authority, and they know that they would be disciplined. So they find that a little unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
Second question, really the question is, as an agribusiness professional, Afghanistan's an agrarian society, and there is too little emphasis put on agricultural security. And this is counterinsurgency. So I'm interested in the response of your panel as to what focus is the security, agriculture, and the food security of the country. And I'll take your answer off the air.
Elson, thank you very much for calling. All right, let's pick it up. Bob Killebrew, Colonel Killebrew, Colonel Wilkerson, you heard a first caller saying you want to vilify somebody, vilify the reporter. What do you say, Bob Killebrew?
Well, as much as I might want to agree with Bob, no matter how much beer you've drunk, a general's never off duty. And he should never have permitted those comments and that attitude in his staff.
And Colonel Wilkerson from our caller Elson, who has two kids in the military, not kids, young man, young woman, they're unsettled. They want to see the commander-in-chief as the top boss and, I guess, not dissed in print by a general. Sympathetic?
I am. My daughter was in the Army. My son was in the Air Force and served in Iraq and Afghanistan and is now in the Air National Guard of Tennessee. And thank Elson for his children's service. His question about agricultural security is a key one. What I see happening in Afghanistan, what I have reported to me almost on a weekly basis, is the fact that opium cultivation is so profitable and so undemanding of resources like scarce water and so forth, that it's very difficult to get farmers off that crop. So Diversifying Afghanistan's agricultural sector is very difficult to do. And, of course, as he intimated, it's key to any successful effort to restore an economic stability to Afghanistan.
Let's get one more call. Saheem in St. Louis, Missouri. Saheem, you're on the air.
Yes, I think Senator McChrystal is using this as an exit strategy. He has been there for a year, so he knows, in his opinion, that the war is not being won. So he's just using this as an opportunity to exit out of it, so he's saving his political or his military credentials.
Saheem, are you Afghan yourself?
I am.
And what do you hear from home? How's it going?
Well, mixed comments, like some people are happy, some people are not happy. So it's hard to filter out, what's the real deal over there.
But you see it as an exit strategy. Bob Killebrew, do you think this thing can still be won given all the political pressures and the lack of material progress on the ground we've seen after what? This is wars longer than Vietnam now.
It depends on time, Tom. I'm convinced that after ignoring the theater for 5 or 6 years, we now have the correct strategy. I believe that we've got the right people in place. I think there are two keys. One is going to be growing the right kind of Afghan political leadership that only they can grow themselves. And the last piece, which is critical, is growing the Afghan army and security forces. The thing that takes time in an insurgency is building a sense of commitment and nationhood on the part of our allies that they're willing to fight and die for their own country. Afghans have always been willing to fight and die for their tribe, and they've always been willing to fight and die for families and each other. But to build an Afghan nature, or I should say rebuild an Afghan nation, in the kind of pressure we're under now is going to take probably longer than 2011, probably much longer. And the question that the president's going to have to face as he confronts General McChrystal today, is this the guy who can help us do it, or does he need to find somebody else because of this Rolling Stone article?
Lawrence Wilkerson, whether it's General McChrystal or someone else, and soon, can this be done?
When we left Vietnam, the world did not collapse. If we leave Afghanistan and Iraq, the world will not collapse. America seems to think it is the indispensable nation, while American leadership, carefully orchestrated, is essential to the world's progress. We are not an indispensable nation. And we need to get out of both of those theaters because our presence there in the size that it is right now is doing more to damage our overall national security interests than it is to solidify them. Regardless of the professional feelings of the military, and I sympathize with those feelings, I was in Vietnam. That's the strategic issue of most importance.
Well, a big day in the history, the long now history of this conflict, longer than the conflict in Vietnam. And to think, we read it in the pages of the Rolling Stone. Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson joining us from Washington today. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
And Colonel Bob Killebrew joining us from Newport News, Virginia. Colonel Killebrew, thank you for your time and thoughts today.
My pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.